This is Earth Files, the award-winning news site with the latest updates in science, environment, and real X-Files. Podcasting in-depth reports beyond the 6 o'clock news by Emmy Award-winning journalist Linda Moulton Howe.
Human Genome Project. We've been hearing those words since 1990 when the U.S. Department of Energy and the U.S. National Institutes of Health formally created the project. The goal has been to identify all the genes in human DNA, the blueprint for a human body. You might wonder why the Department of Energy was involved. Because since the creation of atomic bombs in the 1940s, scientists have tried to understand what radiation does to human bodies and what mutations it causes in human DNA. After 16 years and the hard work of 2,800 scientists around the world, there are some answers and surprises. First, if you think of the human body as a book, and then all of the pages and text together are the genome, the word was coined from genes and chromosomes. The DNA in every cell contains the whole book about how to make a human body. The words in each genome book are the genes. The Human Genome Project expected to find at least 100,000 genes were necessary to create one human body. But one of the big surprises is that the number of genes is only about 22,000, less than several other Earth creatures, especially plants, which have as many as 40,000 genes. The main reason for the smaller number of genes than expected is that human and primate genes are capable of multitasking the production of proteins. You might say the Human Genome Book has a more advanced text, but it still takes 3 billion letters to write out those 22,000 words. The letters are the nucleotides, or base pairs, known as adenine, thymine, cytosine, and guanine. They line up along our double helix DNA like zeros and ones in the software of computers. Now we come to the current main problem in the Human Genome Project. What is the punctuation in a string of 3 billion letters? Scientists now know some of the fragments of sentences, but they don't know the full sentences. That could take another decade at least to figure out how all those letters and words make our bodies work. Another big puzzle is that inside some of the 22,000 genome words are strings of repeating letters. Imagine seeing 100 letter G's and not having a clue why they are there. Scientists call long strings of repeating letters non-coding sequences, or junk DNA. Strangely, there is a lot of junk DNA in the human DNA molecule. That's why a January 11, 2007 Canadian blog by someone named John Stokes and distributed on the web caught my attention. The headline was, "Scientists Find Extraterrestrial Genes in Human DNA." Then the first paragraph stated, quote, "A group of researchers working at the Human Genome Project indicate that they made an astonishing scientific discovery. They believe so-called non-coding sequences in human DNA is no less than genetic code of extraterrestrial life forms," unquote. The Canadian blog names the Human Genome Project group leader of this discovery as a Professor Sam Chang. I could not find any Google listing for Professor Sam Chang, so I decided to get a reality check on the truth from John McPherson, Ph.D. Dr. McPherson is currently Associate Professor in the Department of Human and Molecular Genetics at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. Over the past 10 years, Dr. McPherson was also co-director of the Genome Center at Washington University in St. Louis. There, he was the lead scientist in that university's efforts to map the human genome as well as mouse and chicken genomes. I began by asking him, what is junk DNA?
That still remains to be seen, but it could be in many different things. There are some of the DNA that we have termed junk in the past, which may have been essentially a virus that infected us and jumped around and made copies of itself within our DNA. And then over time, because that eventually would destroy us, it was quieted down, but its remnants are still there. you can activate these things in artificially in cell culture, for example, and you can get them to jump all over the place. There are cases where a disease has been shown to be caused by one of these elements moving into a gene. It gets propagated in their family, and that caused the disease. And so there are some what we call mobile elements in the genome. And where they come from originally, it's a good question, but the sort of theory is that they were just basically viruses that came along and tagged along with us. So, and genomes are growing and expanding, and some are decreasing. This junk DNA, right now, it may have a role. The spacing that it puts in our genome may be required. We don't really know.
How long do you think it will be before you really do know?
Oh, I don't know. We certainly have some ideas of what things are doing now, but probably in the next 10 years, I think we'll have a better idea.
And it will take an entire other decade?
I believe it'll take a decade to figure out much of the genome. Even then, there'll be lots of questions, but just to even come up with what we believe are all the genes and how they interact with each other is at least another decade.
Wow, that's 2017.
Yep. Yeah, getting the sequence was just the start. It really was. It took a long time to get it. It was a 15-year project from the very beginning, and not all sequencing was really done in the last few years, but it was all the preparation before that of learning how to do it. And now that we have the sequence, we have to figure out what it does. And that's one reason we're sequencing lots of other genomes, is so that we can compare them. And by comparing them, figure out what things do.
Is there anything you found that would fall into the category of baffling in the sequencing of the human genes?
The biggest thing that's baffling to us is how it all works. It's often referred to as the parts list. We know the genes, we see them, we can look at them, but we still have to figure out what they do. And just by looking at the sequence, we can't. There's some that we can predict, we think what it does, but there's many that we can't. And so it's still a big puzzle. It's just like maybe an analogy might be a jigsaw puzzle where you've got all the pieces, but you don't have the box that shows you what the picture is. You have to put it together and figure out what it all is. And we're sort of in that stage in many ways. There's some genes we know a lot about, but there's many genes that we have no idea what they do. And so that's the baffling part to me, is just still there's so much work to be done just to figure out how it all works.
Now, have you ever heard of a Professor Sam Chang?
Sam Chang. No, name doesn't ring a bell.
So you personally have not worked with him on the genome project?
No, not that I know of. And there are a lot of people involved that we never got to meet, but we only met through emails and things. But that name doesn't ring a bell.
And in the capacity that you had in St. Louis and today, should you know most of the main people?
Most of the main characters, yeah. Although it was very international, and there were some labs that we never got to go to or meet the people from. And so some of the names didn't stick in my head from back then.
Well, the reason I'm asking is, this is a January 11th, 2007, Canadian national newspaper story, and I'm going to just read to you what I have here that was sent to me in an email. Scientists find extraterrestrial genes in human DNA. Do civilizations of advanced human beings exist scattered in the galaxy? And the author is John Stokes, S-T-O-K-E-S. And this is the beginning that leads up to the name Professor Sam Chang. A group of researchers working at the Human Genome Project indicate that they made an astonishing scientific discovery. They believe so-called 97% non-coding sequences in human DNA is no less than genetic code of extraterrestrial life forms, says Professor Sam Chang, the group leader. Non-coding sequences, originally known as junk DNA, were discovered years ago, and their function remained a mystery.
Well, I've never heard of that. I've never heard of that before, and it certainly doesn't sound very credible to me. But
Well, I'm just wondering how this entire article could be made up.
Actually, I'm just looking on the web as I'm talking to you. It sounds like a blog posting, but do that search. There's all sorts of things pointing towards that. I find it actually kind of funny, but
can you at least comment on the possibility that Homo sapiens sapien may have been seeded by life from someplace else and that it might somehow show up in some way in our genome sequencing project?
Well, as far as I know, there's no evidence to support that. This is all news to me.
Crick and Watson won the Nobel Prize for describing the double helix DNA molecule, my gosh, what is that, 40 years ago or
something? Yeah, 1953, I think.
And they had done a joint paper that was published in Icarus, which is the astrophysical journal.
Mm-hmm.
And their hypothesis was that because there was one spiral DNA molecule in all life on the planet, that it had to mean that panspermia, the act of seeding DNA on this planet, had to have been our actual origins.
Right. I've seen theories like that where people believe that DNA or bacteria or something came to Earth on an asteroid or what have you, and that DNA and RNA wasn't formed in the bubbling oceans of the world. You know, anything's possible because they're all theories at this point. We don't know for sure where things came from. So it is possible that the first DNA came to the world from outside and then evolved. Whether you want to bring up religious arguments or not, that's fine too. I mean, those, I think they all can, in a way, fit into those same arguments. You could say that the first DNA was seeded by God, or you can say it came from an extraterrestrial source. I mean, who knows?
Would you agree with Orgel, Crick Watson, and that group that it is impossible that all of this huge planet would have exactly the same DNA in all creatures?
It's an interesting observation, and you might think that there would be, if it was all coming from the primordial soup, so to speak, that there may be different sources that came up, you know, different ways of doing it. And there are, for example, RNA viruses just have RNA, don't have any DNA, and so some of the theories are that the RNA came first and then DNA evolved later. I don't know. It may be that it was such a rare event for it to happen at all that did seed everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think any theory is just as likely as the next at this point in time.
Would you and your colleagues have any way of identifying something that was introduced in the gene sequence that would seem highly artificial to you compared to the rest of genome sequencing of other life on the planet?
Probably not. I mean, if you look hard enough, you'll find patterns in anything, and then depending how you want to interpret them, I mean, there's even, for example, there's lots of articles on people who, if you take every fifth letter of every third word of the Bible, you spell out this or that, right? And it's the same sort of thing. If you look at patterns long enough and find different ways of looking at them, you will eventually find something by chance. So whether we would recognize something, I don't think we'd be able to recognize anything as being out of the ordinary. We can certainly recognize patterns within the DNA, but what maybe we just don't understand what they do yet, and they may be involved in the structure of the DNA and how it all is compacted into each cell and this sort of thing. We just don't know that yet.
So the bottom line is that even if Homo sapiens sapien was the product of some kind of seeding and then genetic manipulation by other intelligences, that humans would never be able to differentiate between the current DNA that they are and it having been manipulated by another intelligence.
It would be unlikely to be certain, that's for sure. I think you could look at a lot of patterns and you can come up with a lot of things. But I think someone else can look at it and just look at it a little different way and see something different. So I think people will see what they want to see in the patterns.
Well, now, this comes to the work Pablo Svante, who has been doing that work in Germany on that. I think it was an elbow that was found in a cave, and they think that the cave, going back to Neanderthals, was 40,000-some years old.
Right.
But if there were 19 major differences between the genome sequencing on the Neanderthals bone compared to modern Homo sapiens sapien, and the conclusion was that there could not have been sexual intercourse between Neanderthals and Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapien.
There's certainly more differences than 19 that have been observed. It's very difficult sequencing because most of the samples are contaminated with modern DNA, and so it's difficult to sort out the Neanderthal sequences from the modern human. But there are a few samples that are supposedly uncontaminated. But DNA is not stable either, and over time it changes. And so the other problem you have is determining which changes are real and which are things that have happened to the DNA over time. So the DNA degrades in such a way that bases change. So when we sequence them, we see a different base there than was actually there at the time. So I think it's still very early on to be analyzing that data to make any statements whatsoever about it.
Well, if there was no sexual connection between the Neanderthals line and the Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapien that came later,
mm-hmm.
Where did Cro-Magnon Homo sapiens sapien come from?
Well, they didn't have to breed together to diverge. right? I mean, they could be geographically isolated offshoot in evolution, which evolved independently. If we all evolved throughout time out of Africa, there could definitely be groups that were geographically isolated and evolved independently.
If there was manipulation of DNA in already evolving primates on the planet, then it's possible that Homo sapien or Neanderthalus or even Homo erectus could have been the product of some kind of genetic tampering?
I don't believe that, but if you look at all over the planet, there are species of birds, for example, that are clearly related but cannot interbreed. How did they become all different? Well, they became different because they isolated in different areas and they started to evolve to adapt to the local environment. So the beak changed so that it could eat a certain thing. And then as they changed and evolved, the chromosomes changed enough that they could no longer interbreed. They all are very, very related and can be connected back to some progenitor bird. So the fact that they're different doesn't mean that anyone manipulated them. They just changed over time.
And so the bottom line to all of this is that even if there was an extraterrestrial manipulation or seeding of DNA on this planet or other planets, we would never be able to prove it.
I would think that we probably couldn't prove it. It would be very, very difficult for us to prove that.
Now, one of the headlines in 2004 was, and I'm reading from MIT, a news release, the number of genes in the human genome is lower than previously estimated, considerably lower. Could you elaborate and explain this?
Well, when we started sequencing the genome, the prediction was that there would be 100,000 human genes. That prediction was based largely on the few genes that had been sequenced. Their size was around 30,000 base pairs, and since the human genome was 3 billion base pairs, just doing the math, it seemed that if the average gene was 30,000, then it would be that there are 100,000 genes. I think that's sort of the simplistic view of where that came from. Of the things that had been sequenced at the time, the C. elegans, the worm, was being sequenced, and it looked like there were 20,000 genes in it. And so it seemed reasonable that maybe as part of our arrogance that we thought that there should be then 100,000 human genes. In the end, when we sequenced it, it turned out to be, and it's still a debatable point, actually, how many genes there are, but there's maybe something like 22,000 human genes. And the difference is not the number of genes, but the complexity of the genes that has more to do with the complexity of the organism.
If I understand what you just said, you mean if we have 22,000 and other creatures may have 30,000 or more, that our gene sequencing is more complex?
Our genes, one gene tends to make multiple proteins, whereas a lot of things like the worm, the elegans, one gene makes one protein. And our genes, you know, at least make two proteins on average, when some genes make many, many proteins. It's called differential splicing, and it's a way of mixing and matching parts within that gene to make a different protein. So we get more complexity out of the genes that we have than something like worm.
Is there on the planet another animal that is very similar to our gene sequencing in the complexity?
In complexity, yeah. We've sequenced now some of the primates, chimpanzee and macaque and things like that, and they have very similar genomes to our own. Almost any mammalian genome have roughly about the same number of genes as human. I think the largest numbers I've seen are in plants, actually. Some of the plants have 40,000 genes, and plants tend to be chemical factories. They tend to produce a lot of compounds to protect themselves from insects since they can't run away like we can. They're stuck in one spot, and so they have a lot of chemical synthesis machinery, and that may account for a lot of the genes that they have.
Of all of our primate colleague Earth life, which is the closest to Homo sapiens sapien?
Chimpanzee.
The chimpanzee is closer than an orangutan or a gorilla or others?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah. We haven't finished sequencing all the others, but the chimpanzee so far is the closest.
And what is the current focus of your work right now?
Right now, we are using the information we have to go in and sequence genes within individuals looking for the cause of disease. So we're looking for differences in the genes, which may be related then to the disease that we're studying. We have a number of projects going on, epilepsy, obesity, and many others. We're looking at cancer as well. And the idea then is we now know what a normal gene looks like by doing the sequencing we did. And so what we're looking for now are variations of those genes which may be associated with disease.
Is there a particular gene disease link that you think is firm that might be in a disease that we would be surprised about?
Oh, I'm always surprised. I'm surprised every day by things that we see. What we're finding, I think, in its early days, but many of the diseases that we know about in the past, like cystic fibrosis, there was a very definite change in the gene that we could associate with the disease. And now what we're looking at are what we call complex disorders, where it may be subtle variations in a number of genes, which all add up to give you the disease. And these subtle variations, you may find someone without the disease has some of those, but it's having all of them together that gives the disease. And so it can be very difficult to tease it out. And so that's why we're sequencing lots of genes in a lot of people, looking for these associations where a change in this gene isn't enough to give you the disease, but a change in gene 1 plus the change in gene 2 plus the change in gene 3 all add up to give you the disease. And I think the surprising thing is what we're seeing is just how much variation there are in all the genes in all of us. But it depends on how they're mixed and matched, whether you get heart disease and things like that.
Thanks for listening to this Earth Files podcast from the edges of science, environment, and real X-Files. Go to www.earthfiles.com to see more than 1,000 Earth Files reports with photographs, drawings, and documents. And visit Earth Files every day, every week, for new reports and new podcasts. That's www.earthfiles.com.